Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones. Call in and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting Tuesday on Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick. I'm Annie. And, of course, my co-host Cool Mike is with me. He's not in the chat room because right now he's in the capital of Michigan hobnobbing with some politicians, so he is on his car phone. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Oh, thank you, Annie. Hobnobbing, yeah. maybe showing the, getting shown the exit once they find out who I am. But I should actually be, log in fairly soon. I don't have to be this this gathering in a little while. But it's great to be here as we conclude our district challenge, having all these wonderful people running for Congress. I'll tell you something. When you are in cities, capital cities, it is amazing when you go to the districts, each downtown, because I travel a lot. You have the franchises and all kinds of different cafes and whatever. In the middle of all these places, these bars and restaurants, bail bonds. Always. It's just never fails. And then, like, right across from the – it said here, ring buzzer, 24/7 service. Swipe credit card here. Jeez. But anyway, it is amazing. I'm really glad Ozzy is going to join us today. Boy, that Debbie, she certainly is what we refer to as an attention whore, and she's making news now over the weekend, opening her big mouth.
Well, we're going to bring on our guest, Ozzy DeFaria, who is running for the 23rd District in Florida, which encompasses Fort Lauderdale, against our great nemesis, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I'll be welcoming him on shortly, but want to remind everyone that every show, what we try to do is dedicate it to our fallen heroes. And today's show is dedicated to the memories of two of them, Army Sergeant First Class Clifford E. Betty and Private First Class Roman Mora Jr. Now, I have something here that I pulled up from the Los Angeles Times, and this is about Raymond Mora Jr. This was written October 16, 2001. And it reads, fresh out of high school, Raymond Mora Jr. saw no limits to his dreams. He could become a veterinarian or a stock market wizard, maybe even an ace helicopter pilot. His mind was really open and clear, said his grandfather, Balthazar Mora of Ontario. The elder Mora and his wife, Maria Teresa, helped raise their grandson for most of his life. His 19 years presented challenges at times, bumps in the road, and he doggedly overcame, always determined, always looking forward. He enlisted in the Army soon after graduating from Valley View High School in Ontario with an eye on helicopter mechanic training. As it happened, fixing helicopters and perhaps flying them would have to wait. The teenager decided instead to become an infantryman with the 1st Battalion, 63rd Armored Regiment, and 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 1st Infantry Division, based in Fort Riley, Kansas. On May 22nd, PFC Raymond Mora was one of two soldiers killed by a roadside bomb that ripped into the Humvee in Baghdad. It was his day off, Balthazar Mora said. He always wanted to drive in a Humvee, and they offered to let him drive that day. Normally, his position was gunner up on top. The gunner that day survived. The grandfather's voice thickened with grief. He was an outstanding soldier who never quit and went out of his way to do extra for everybody. Maria Teresa Mora struggled at length to speak through her tears. I'm very proud of him, she said. The pain of Raymond Mora's loss is eased somewhat by the joyful memories the mere mention of his name summons for his loved ones. He would always put a smile on your face, his cousin said, Jessica Angular, 20. He was never a down person. He was always in a good mood. Angular said they were close as brother and sister, and she turned to him whenever she needed a shoulder. It was mostly boy problems I would go to him about, she recalled laughing. He'd say, let's go to the mall, and I'll find someone for you. Growing up, Mora was enchanted by critters, dogs and cats especially, but also spiders and nearly everything else that crawled or took wing. He talked about becoming a veterinarian long before the Army captured his imagination, although the military was in his blood. Generations of the family have fought for flag and country, said his grandfather, a Marine for 11 years. Both of Raymond Mora's great-grandfathers served in the Army in World War II. One landed on the beaches of Normandy. The other was a medic taken prisoner by the Germans. So the young man was wrapped when Army recruiters stopped by Valley View High. They offered him vocational training as a helicopter mechanic, his grandfather said. I told him that would be good because I was a mechanic all of my life. First, though, Mora had to knuckle down to complete high school. He succeeded and came to cherish academics, resolving that eventually he would earn a college degree. After that, he would take a crack at Wall Street, his latest dream. Yet he couldn't shake the lure of the uniform, the idea that an Army stint would be a great way to jumpstart adulthood. He signed up for 5 years. The family was a bit fearful, but respected his choice. Obviously, I supported my cousin 100%, Angular said. I always told him to be careful. He loved the Army. He loved everybody over there. He never worried about us. He told us everything was peaceful. Balthazar Mora said military life transformed his grandson, whom he called Junior. Overnight, he was a totally different person, very mature, very sure of what he wanted to do. After boot camp, Mora felt confident enough about the future to get married. His wife, Amanda, would be widowed just 7 months later. Last Christmas, Mora's grandparents shipped him half a dozen boxes of treats. He called us, and he said he needed some more, and we sent him some more. He told us a lot of guys there didn't have families and didn't get packages, and he wanted to share them. Raymond Mora's final trip home was in February. A respite he packed with outings to Disneyland and other amusement parks. Then Junior showed up at the house with a dog, an Alaskan husky, Bella, a puppy. He wanted us to take care of her until he came back in November. We still have her. emotions welled, and he labored to continue. He was also thinking about getting a motorcycle. We tried to talk him out of it. An intersection here is marked where a motorcyclist was killed by a truck. He saw that and kind of changed his mind and talked about getting a car. That's why he was so anxious to drive the Humvee, because he never got the chance to drive. Recently, a letter addressed to Raymond Mora arrived at his home. It was from a business school confirming his enrollment in online courses, another step toward his dream. Wow.
Oh, good job, Annie. Oh, man. Is it loud in my background?
No, I could hear that there are people in the background.
Okay.
But I do have something that was up on YouTube that is for Sergeant Betty, and let me give him equal honor and time. This is up on YouTube about the first sergeant class, Clifford E. Betty.
A medical aid family says their son died fighting for the country he so passionately loved. Medical Lake High School graduate Sergeant First Class Cliff Beatty was killed by an improvised explosive device in Baghdad Sunday. Today, Cliff's family sat down with KXLY4 Sally Showman to talk about the legacy of their son.
Robin, Sergeant First Class Clifford Beatty had two main loves in his life, his family and his country. He loved his family so much, his mom says he was sent to the principal's office several times when he was at Medical Lake High School for defending his three sisters. And he loved his country so much, he was deployed to Iraq three separate times. Now this man that always protected his family and his country leaves a huge hole.
You don't expect it to happen to you until it does.
Cliff was the Beatty's only son, their family hero.
You just can't believe that it really happened.
On Sunday, Sergeant First Class Cliff Beatty's unit was attacked with an IED. Cliff and a 19-year-old member of his unit did not survive. Cliff's mom says he knew the risks when he enlisted nearly two decades ago.
I says, you know, Cliff, why are you going? And he says, well, first off, Mom, it's my job. And I says, yeah, I know, Cliff, but why you? You're our only son. And he said, Mom, I'm going for you and Dad. I'm going for my sisters. I'm going for my wife and my kids. I want them to have a place to be safe and protected.
Cliff has a 13-year-old son and a 17-year-old daughter. He was married to his best friend. Both he and his wife, Karen, were drill sergeants. She, too, is deployed and serving at Camp Liberty in Baghdad.
He probably did more in 37 years than a lot of people do in a lifetime.
Victor Beatty served in the Air Force. He was Cliff's inspiration to join the military.
When Victor would be deployed, we depended on Cliff to kind of hold us together and take care of us.
Although the boy and man they've always leaned on is gone, they say he's not far away.
We feel him here with us, and we know he's at peace, and our faith gives us a lot of comfort because we know we'll see him again.
Okay.
Cliff is cremated and likely buried at the Veterans Cemetery in Medical Lake. Cliff's wife arrives in Spokane on Friday. Funeral arrangements will be set at a later date. In the newsroom, Sally Showman, KXLY4, HD News.
Okay, that was in honor of Army Sergeant First Class Clifford E. Betty, and what I read was for Private First Class Raymond Mora, Jr. God rest their souls, and thank you for the service.
Wow, man. Doesn't get any easier, does it?
No, this is the hardest part of the show, and you know me. I had to mute my mic because I was crying.
Yeah, well, it's every soldier is so important to somebody. But to us, they're all so important, and it is difficult, that's for sure. But, I mean, this is freedom is not free. And,
no, it's not.
These are the prices that these unselfish, unself-absorbed heroes do, and may they all rest in peace. And we are actually, today's guest is running for Congress. It is because of these people and many others like them that give us the right to vote, the right to protest, although that's getting taken away. But all these rights are basically because of these heroes.
Yes. Okay, well, with that in mind, we're going to bring our guest in, Mr. Ozzie.
I'll introduce Ozzie. Why don't you go wipe your the tears out and get yourself together?
Oh, you know, I'm just a big softie.
All righty, go ahead. Go ahead, Annie.
Oh, welcoming aboard Mr. Ozzie DeFerio, who's running for the 23rd District in Florida against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He has several challengers in the primary, which I believe is coming up June 11th.
Actually, the primary is August 14th. But before I get into it, I want to listening to those tributes, my gratitude, and I'm a first-generation American, so with my parents coming over here, my gratitude, my thanks, my heart goes out to the families of all our military personnel, especially our fallen soldiers, because, as you said, they make it all possible. It's not only the soldiers that are tributed, they get the tributes publicly, but all of the wounded vets and those that fall in the line of fire and put themselves in harm's way for us to have our freedoms. You know, I think that's one thing that both sides of the aisle can certainly agree on, and my heart goes out to all of them, my gratitude, my thanks, and my heart goes out to their families who absolutely the biggest price.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was just a couple of weeks back, we had the Independence Fund host the Healing Heroes Golf Week, and we did a live broadcast from Cat Island on their course, I forget what it's called now, over there, and we had a lot of these wounded veterans come on board and talk on the show, which was fantastic. I think we just lost our guest. Our guest phone.
I'm sure he'll call back. He's probably on the road. I'm sure he'll call back.
Yeah. But I was reminding everyone that we did the Healing Heroes Golf adding just a couple of weeks back. So please go into our archives and listen to that episode with the Healing Heroes and go to the independencefund.com and make even a $5 donation if they can.
Bring a roll of toilet paper or bring a box of Kleenex with you, too.
Oh, but I have to admit, one of the people that we did interview on that golf edit outing, if you remember, I mentioned that the gentleman I was talking to, Sergeant Major Acosta, Jesse Acosta, he was the blind gentleman who was actually birdieing. He was hitting perfect putts. And on Sunday on Fox News, they had an episode where they did this stuff about the para wheelchair and about his putting and everything, and he was on Fox News on Sunday.
That's cool.
Yeah, and
I actually thought he was lying when he was saying how good. I mean, I'm obviously far away, so I'm, wow.
There's actually a YouTube video up there. If anyone just Googles the name up on YouTube, Sergeant Major Jesse Acosta, and you will see the actual video where he shoots these perfect putts. They just explain to him what the lay of the ground is, you know, whether or not you're going uphill, what's the angle, and so on and so forth. And he's able to understand and digest all that information and hit these absolutely holes, perfect putts. I mean, you never thought a blind guy could play golf, but here was Jesse playing golf. Absolutely phenomenal.
You know, that's amazing for about our souls. It's amazing about our soldiers. I mean, they're just so selfless, and here they're handicapped, and it doesn't even matter. You're blind, and the guy's putting. I mean, I have no doubt if this person had no legs, no arms, blind and deaf, with a missing head, that he would be putting. I mean, they're just amazing. When you interviewed with them, I mean, it was almost like they just did not even want to talk about their handicaps, not because they have a problem with it, because they feel they still haven't given enough for this country.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, I'm going to play Todd Allen Harrington's song, My Name is America, while I try to see if we can get our guest to come back on. It looks like his phone was dropped. So in the interim, this is another person who has been a guest on our show, and this new song is starting to go viral. My Name is America. Okay.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flame. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me,
Herondine, and My Name is America. And please look him up on YouTube and watch the video. It's really powerful. Now, I want to welcome back our guest, Ozzie DeFaria.
Good to be here, guys.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at your bio on your website, and you come from, actually, Portugal.
Actually, my parents came from the Cape Verde Islands, which was a Portuguese colony. That's just off the coast of Africa, down here in South Florida. People know it because that's where the hurricanes begin. And my parents actually came over to the United States in 1960. They came to Boston, where there was a big influx of Cape Verdean immigrants. I was actually born in Boston, one of six kids. And fortunately, I've been able to live the American dream. My parents came here in 60. They had no money. They couldn't speak English. They had no real labor skills. My father had a fourth grade education. My mother had finished the 10th grade. And they came here really because they wanted an opportunity. They knew that America was the land of opportunity. They realized it was not the land of equal achievement and that you needed to work for everything that you would get. And that's what they came here for. And my father worked in the same Boston factory for 41 years. My mother worked every single odd job there was to make sure that there was someone home with the kids. I worked in that same factory as my father in Boston for five summers. Started working in a canteen, cleaning a canteen truck when I was 13 years old. I was actually saving that money to go to the University of Maine. I worked at Maine on the grounds crew, put myself through college. And then really in 1985, when I graduated from college in the middle of the Reagan administration, college graduates could get good jobs. Wouldn't that be nice again?
Yeah.
And I rose up through the ranks at AT&T, got my MBA at night, went to Harvard Business School for postgraduate work. And really, for me, it's all about free enterprise. And I left and was president, CEO, and COO of three different companies, the last one down in South Florida. And now I want to help probably the most troubled company there is, the U.S. government, as we go deeper and deeper into debt. And my biggest issue is the economy, the deficit that we're running under, the federal debt. And I think we need business skills in D.C., and we don't need more career politicians on either side of the aisle that keep exacerbating the problem. We need free market solutions, and we need to get our spending under control.
Oh, that's true. Matter of fact, I was just reading that Nancy Pelosi is berating Congress because we're telling her, no, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling one more time.
Well, I think even what's even more ridiculous, I think she's saying Republican side of the aisle and even on the Democrat side of the aisle are saying, listen, if we're going to raise the debt ceiling, we need appropriate spending cuts. And she's saying it's gamesmanship. Which is ridiculous because you look at the criticism that former Senator Obama sent towards President Bush when the debt ceiling was raised and saying how it was irresponsible. The debt, the federal deficit and the spending is out of control. And I would not raise the debt ceiling because it's just a license to spend more and more and more. And we need to force the issue. I always tell people, you know, when I ran my businesses, every year I needed to present a budget to my board of directors. Expense, revenue, what's my profit, and that always pushed me for more. And if I didn't deliver, you know, I was going to be out of a job. And ultimately, the board of directors had the power to remove a CEO. The taxpayers are the board of directors for our politicians, and we need to remove people who aren't delivering the results that we need. And the only way we're going to get the economy back on track is free market solutions. And the value of our dollar, you know, we're on the way of heading toward a lot of European countries unless we get our spending under control.
Well, I see that on you. You're talking about simplifying the U.S. tax code. What do you mean by that?
Well, our tax code is outrageous. You know, we have, you know, probably 80,000 page tax code. It's far too complex. It's taking far too long for people to fill out their taxes. They don't understand it, and there are far too many loopholes. I absolutely believe we need to go to a simplified tax code, something along the lines of Herman Cain's 999 plan. And I'm not saying that's the only solution, but we need a simple plan. Brazil has a simple tax code, and it's a strong economy. We need simple solutions to get the to get the tax code in line, whether it be a 999, a flat tax, a fair tax. The things I like about 999 are, you know, one, it is simple. Two, you get rid of loopholes. And then with basically a national sales tax, you're going to generate revenue from people who aren't paying taxes today, people in the underground economy. People, you know, I agree, people need to pay their fair share, and we have far too many people who aren't paying taxes, and we need to make it fairer for all people.
Well, would you support a fair tax if that was to go forward? Because I believe Herman Cain's idea was to institute the 999 and then phase that out and phase in the fair tax.
Well, I put it this way. I think there are a number of solutions that I would support. I'd want to see the absolute revenue impact of this in order to be responsible. But with whatever tax code we put in place, one, the things that I would demand are that it's simple and easy to understand, and we need spending cuts on the, you know, because the one side is the revenue side and the other side is the spending side. I think a fair tax has a lot of strong components to it. It is simple, easier to understand. I think there are some issues that need to be worked out as far as how the rebates work or what have you. Now we're going to get into some specific details. But absolutely, I support simplified tax code, whether it be fairer. I want it to be fairer and flatter. I think 999 actually had benefits of both.
All right. Now, I'm reading that recently, this is an article by Curtis Dubé, that Harry Reid, wants to increase the student loan payroll tax, but he wants to have this by raising taxes on small businesses to the tune of $9 billion over 10 years.
Harry Reid has no clue, no clue on what it takes to get the economy going. This is actually appropriate that you bring that up. It's actually Small Business Week. And small businesses are the engine that drives our economy and that really drive our growth. So the impact of Obamacare, the uncertainty of Obamacare on them, to talk about increasing the tax on them, it's just absurd because you're going to choke their growth opportunities. I hadn't necessarily seen that specific Harry Reid proposal. It doesn't surprise me because he doesn't look through the ramifications of some of the crazy ideas. This is also the lead. This is also the leader of a Senate that hasn't passed a budget in over 1,000 days and now has said they're not going to pass a budget for the remainder of Obama's term. That's it's absurd. And this is the leader of the Senate, one of the leaders of our country, to come up with these statements and then, you know, whether it's a tax, a budget, they're not in tune with what the American public wants or needs or what our economy needs.
Now, this is what disturbs me, because Harry Reid is blocking it and he's preventing the budget from going through, as well as any other legislation that the Republicans are proposing. But by blocking the budget, isn't he violating federal statute? He's actually breaking the law and committing a felony. Can he not be removed from office and impeached?
Well, I think I'd have to look at the specifics on that, but the fact that we haven't passed a budget, all American citizens should be up in arms. And this is the major problem. You know, when people talk about this election being the most important election of our lifetime, it's probably said in the past, absolutely it's the case, because this election isn't about our kids or grandkids. This is about us, because we can't continue down this path. And, you know, we need to gain control. When I say we, conservative spenders, fiscally conservative, socially conservative people, we need to take back control of the Senate. We need to gain control of the executive branch, and hopefully all Republicans, conservatives, and independents will rally around Mitt Romney. And we need to even gain stronger control of the House, because we're just at a stalemate here and things aren't happening. The Senate is blocking anything, and Obama has basically put the government on hold until he can in hopes of getting a second term.
Now, second term is the scariest thing I ever heard. I mean,
you're telling me. Ozzy, quick question regarding one of the problems I see with our spending are the departments. I mean, I'm not sure what the goal of the Department of Energy is, but it at least appears from a taxpayer standpoint that they're very bad at their job, as well as the Department of Education.
There are numbers.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say there are a number of departments, but let me just take one that you touched on there. Department of Education. I graduated from high school in 1981, and the Department of Education was actually put in place by Jimmy Carter. I believe it was right around 1980. Ronald Reagan, when he took office, one of the first things he tried to do was eliminate the Department of Education. He didn't get anywhere with that, obviously. But think about it. On an education, and I have six children, the only people I want involved in education, you want to push it to the lowest forms of government. And really, you want the most important people in an education are a student, a parent, a principal, and a teacher. Everything else is superfluous noise. Those are where we really want an education. Now, to have a federal government involved, has public education got better since 1980? I dare anyone to try to tell me that it has. It has not. You do not want the federal government involved in education. We need to push it down to the lowest forms of government. And absolutely, that's one department that should go away right away. And there are a number of departments, exactly. When you talk about the Department of Energy, one of the countries, not just from an energy dependence, but from a foreign affairs and defense perspective, we're at the mercy of a lot of countries that don't like us when it comes to oil imports. We need to become energy independent, in all options need to be on the table. We need to have more nuclear power plants, natural gas, clean coal. The whole fact of Obama being at the mercy of environmentalists in blocking the Keystone Pipeline. These are absurd things, and the Department of Energy is not serving its purpose. The Department of Education, and the list goes on and on and on, and the federal government is far too fat. I was just in D.C. At the end of April, and you can just see it. And we need to reduce the size of government, and we need free enterprise because, the vision that I have for this country versus the vision that Debbie Wasserman Schultz have for this country couldn't be more polar. I absolutely believe a free market solution versus a big government solution that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Obama administration push forward.
No, I completely agree with you because recently in his speech, Obama had been touting how much oil production has increased under his watch. But what he's not telling you that oil production has increased, yes, slightly, but everything that's occurring is occurring on private or state-owned lands. Not on federal lands. In fact, federal land production has decreased since he took office. So if
President Obama's mode of operandi is to take credit for everything and then pass blame on anything that goes wrong. So for him to take credit for that, he is the consummate politician, and I think people are going to see through that. The number one, he has a record to run on. Run on your record as opposed to just trying to attack. He didn't have a record, fool us once, shame on me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool us twice, shame on me. We can't be fooled this time. The American public should not be fooled. He has a record to run on. Let's look at his accomplishments, and then let's vote accordingly.
All right. Now,
In preparation for this, Ozzie. Oh, go ahead, Annie. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Finish up because I was going to ask you another different question.
Well, first of all, I just had a tap on my shoulder where I'm actually at this cafe. I got you on the speaker. And a lady behind us says, my husband and I had six kids. I like this guy. And I looked at her and I said, are you Catholic? She said, yeah. I said, so is he. She said, she's got my vote. But anyway, I'm in Michigan. Okay, here's a big question I have.
I lived in Michigan for a couple of years.
Oh, really? What city?
I actually lived in Okemos, just outside of Lansing. I had a company that was based in East Lansing, right across the street from Michigan State.
Wow. Quick question. Since we've preparing to have you and Mr. Kaufman and Joe, the district has kind of played musical chairs. Every time I see Debbie, whether it's on YouTube or on TV like I saw on CNN, I just want to throw up. I mean, she almost seems borderline communist. And I say that realistically. Some of the things, it's almost as if government needs to – I mean, she's almost never saying people, we the people, or private sector. How do you interpret this puppet of Barack Obama? It's almost like she's got strings to her arms. And Barack is controlling the puppet.
Well, I think, Debbie has run. She's been a four-term congresswoman. She's never been seriously challenged in any of the races. I think this year it's going to be different. One is we're doing a great job raising money. We're getting national support. We have donors from 48 states, from D.C. So we absolutely are getting the support and raising the money. Secondly, the distinction between Debbie Wasserman Schultz and me could not be any starker. It's a stark contrast. I have spent my entire career. I'm 48 years old. I've spent 25, 26 years in the private sector. I mentioned at AT&T, I was president, CEO, and COO of three companies. One that we took public. I rescued a bankrupt company and moved down South Florida to take over a money transfer company that I purchased with a private equity firm. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I believe she's probably around 44 years old, has spent her entire career, including her time at the University of Florida, in government, whether it's student government, state government, federal government. And absolutely. I will take, you know, you cannot tell me a project that the federal government has undertaken, a major project that they finished on time and on or under budget. You know, you look at Obamacare, even the conservative, when I say conservative, the low estimates are showing that Obamacare is going to be far more costly than they originally anticipated. You do not want the federal government taking over one-sixth of your economy. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz and President Obama believe that the federal government know better than free enterprise. And I think people are going to have the opportunity to make that decision, because ultimately the attacks can go on all day. Ultimately, the decision is about what direction do you want the country to go into. My parents came here because they did not want big government involved in everything in their daily lives. That's the way I'm raised. That's the way I've seen it successful in business. We need to allow the economic, private economic engine of free enterprise, small, medium, large-sized businesses, let the economy flourish, as opposed to the government providing chokeholds and strangleholds with high taxes and high regulation. It doesn't work, and it's that simple. And my reason for running is because that's what I believe in. The economy is a shambles. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for me, as head of the DNC, one, she's ignoring her constituents here in South Florida, and two, she is the gift that keeps on giving. Every single day, I don't need to do a lot of opposition research. She's the gift that keeps on giving. Every single day, she'll make one outrageous statement after another on national TV, and I get emails and saying, what about this? And I couldn't ask for a better gift than the visibility of her as the head of the DNC, because I can show what I believe in, and then they can look at what she believes in. and you chuckle, but it really is the case. It really is the case. I believe even Obama's team realizes that she's a loose cannon. They think Joe Biden's a gaffe machine. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it's one after another of outrageous statement, and she is drinking Obama's Kool-Aid. And when she was made of the head of the DNC, she agreed she was never going to disagree with him publicly. I doubt she disagrees with them privately on anything. And they're trying to create they don't want to run on their record, so they're creating false stories, whether it's a war on women or trying to make up stories that the you know, make it a class warfare issue. Let's talk about the real issues as opposed to, you know, these made-up issues, so people don't have to talk about results and accomplishments because they don't have them to run on.
It's funny. They do say that the conservatives have a war on women, but if they know anything about the Tea Party, the majority of Tea Parties that exist here in the United States were formed by women.
And then even if you look at Obama's record and what's happened with women pay and women unemployment, none of it's improved under President Obama. It was all rhetoric. And then if you look at, you know, ultimately the economy working and the economy flourishing is going to help all Americans. It's going to help the wealthy. It's going to help the middle class. It's going to help the poor and poverty-stricken. When my parents came here, they worked for wealthy people. And my father, not in these words, but when we talk about the 1% versus the 99%, he looked at these guys, and I was working in a factory, sweating. I hated every minute of it. And I'd see these guys coming out of the air-conditioned office. He goes, don't you get upset with them. That's what I want for you. Work hard, get educated, and you'll be able to move forward. I honestly believe if Obama's policies were in place from 1963 to today, there's no way I would be the person that I am.
This is true. Now, just a little background. I used to live in I worked in Boston. I lived in Waltham. And at that point, I was working for American Express, and I was working as an acting manager there. I've been to Cape Verde Islands. I think it was back in 78 or 79. Back then, I owned my own travel agency. So like you, I worked hardscrabble. I worked three jobs to put myself through college. But now what they want to do is give everyone free college. These college loans are going to be forgiven. So they're basically going to be giving away free college. Is that inside the Constitution? I couldn't seem to find it.
Well, I mean, first off, how do you do that? You know, there's no free rides. Ultimately, if you're talking about free college, someone's paying for it. You know, and the problem with the country today is Barack Obama and his policies of trying to make people dependent and addicted to free stuff, whether it's food stamps, whether it's unemployment. These are major problems, and they're problems on both sides of the aisle. You know, I have opponents on the Republican side that have certainly favored extending unemployment benefits. It doesn't work, and that's the problem. I know small business owners that have a hard time hiring people for entry-level positions because they can't get people to take these jobs. They'd rather continue to take unemployment. You know, there are real-life examples of this. I talk to small business owners every single day. There are jobs out there, but we need to incent people to really go out and find these jobs and work. And it's opposite of the nanny state that Obama is trying to create for political. And maybe there are things that he absolutely believes in, but they're not what I believe in.
Yeah, no, this is what I find amazing because people that are on unemployment, like you said, there is no incentive for them to get off. It used to be you would have to stand in line, and by the time you got to the counter, if you weren't there in exactly your appointment time, they gave you a hard time and possibly not even give you your check. You had to prove that you were actually looking for a job. But now they just give you an ATM card, and just every now and then they put money on it. The same thing with welfare benefits. You know, it's an ATM card. You can go and take cash out. We just lost our guest again.
Well, I'm sure he'll call back. I was going to make a comment, too, on something he said about Debbie as we wait for him to call back, is that sometimes when you listen to a politician, you think people would be smart, but it seems like they get dumber because every day when they're saying we need to do this or government needs to do this or government needs to do that, that's almost a slogan to not vote for people. I remember a politician, I can't think of his name. I was younger at the time, and I skipped school to go see him because he was a big name. He ran for, I think he was running for U.S. Senate. And I remember him in front of everybody saying, what in the hell is going on around here? He says, middle of the day, look at all you people here. He said, what are you doing here in the middle of the day? What in the hell's happened to this country? You know, he's talking, and it's very true. That we need to empower ourselves more, and just we are the people. We need to take this away from government, and I mean, unless we do it.
Well, you know, believe it or not, Reverend Wright said something in an interview with Hannity recently, and this is all that stuff that just broke in this past week about Reverend Wright and his disagreements with Obama. Obama wants government to become the new God. They want to take God away from us, our religion away from us, so therefore we become dependent upon the government and not self-sufficient. Well, it looks like we got our guest back. Ozzy, you're back?
Yes, I am. Having some problems today.
Yeah, it seems like it. You're
having
fun with your phone.
Ozzy, how do you feel regarding the Patriot Act and just more and more extensions onto the Patriot Act? Would you be voting for those or against those, or just your overall perspective?
Yeah, I think the Patriot Act, when it originally went in place after 9/11, had a purpose. I actually was the president and chief operating officer of a money transfer company, and we had to manage through all the Patriot Act for senders and receivers of money. I think that there need to be some changes to make sure civil liberties are protected. You know, one of the things that people lose sight is we had a terrible tragedy in 9/11. We need to make sure all citizens are protected. But however, we need to make sure we're doing it with the proper view on civil liberties.
All right. Would you look to repeal large portions of it or just the whole thing?
Well, ultimately, you know, I think it's not going to be a line item. You're going to repeal the whole thing and then probably implement some things different. But I want to make sure we're doing it, that we're not infringing on U.S. citizens' civil liberties.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, I was just going to comment, Ozzy, on a picture of your family. You have a very, very beautiful family.
Well,
I must
thank
say.
You so much. Thank you so much. I'm really proud of all of them. I think some of these photos I get a hard time because we had four away at college, and so we only had pictures with some at home. But they're actually a great group of kids and young adults now. So fortunately, I'm blessed in that regard. But thank you for bringing
it up. Yeah, you should have had your wife as Susan, correct?
Yes, she is.
You should have had her run as a Democrat against Debbie because she's much prettier than Debbie. She'd win. You guys are in.
I can get in trouble enough on my own, so I'm not even going to touch that one.
All right, go ahead, Annie.
Oh, God, you made me almost forget what I wanted to ask. Obamacare has been making a lot of assaults on religion, trying to get the different religions to enforce providing birth control. What's your stand?
Well, first off, and this is it's a great question, and I want to talk a bit about how the Democrats have twisted this. Let me start with Obamacare right off from an overall perspective. The federal government taking over 1/6 of our economy will be a disaster, and I'm hopeful next month the Supreme Court will overturn it. With that being said, if it's not overturned, some of the things that the federal government is doing in with Obamacare, basically now you're trying to impose your will and tell individual organizations that they need to go against what they believe in when it comes to birth control or what have you. They're trying to make this about a war on women. This has nothing to do with women or war on women. This is basically telling Catholics or any, I think the whole point becomes, when does it stop? Really, when does it start? You're going to tell a Catholic organization that in their insurance coverage, they need to provide for free birth control. That should not be the federal, that's not the federal government's mandate. That's not the federal government. That's not what the Constitution called for. And I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court will overturn it on those grounds, in which even leads us to how important this next presidential election is and Senate election is, because the president is going to appoint the new Supreme Court justice, which may be two or three in the next presidential term, and the Senate needs to approve them. So we need to take back control of the presidency and of the Senate. But it's ridiculous how they've twisted this and made it into a war on woman story as opposed to a civil liberty story.
All right. Now, what's your position on government becoming involved in marriage, the gay marriage right, as they're trying to claim? Should government be even involved in marriage?
Well, it probably should not be. And more importantly, I would certainly say, I believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. And I think absolutely Obama's positioning, his evolving positioning, I guess if you're a Democrat, you're evolving. If you're a Republican, you're a flip-flopper. but I think his position is absolutely done for political expediency. I don't think that's the major issues of the day. And I think we really need to keep steering the conversation back to the economy. However, if you know my particular position on this, I'm a social conservative. I believe marriage is between one man and one woman. And I would defend the Defense of Marriage Act.
Would you support federal legislation mandating that? Or do you believe that's a state issue?
It really is a state issue. Basically, it's a state issue. It's not something that's brought up in the Constitution. If you're going to ask my personal view, my view is marriage is between one man and one woman.
All right. Now, they were complaining that you have domestic partners, and they're saying the domestic partners don't have the same rights that a married couple have. So my question would be then, well, why don't you then define domestic partnership and base all your laws and, property rights, inheritance rights, children and stuff like that, make all those contracts based upon a domestic partnership? Why do you have to use the word marriage, which to me has a religious connotation?
Right. I mean, I absolutely agree with you there. And then you're opening up a whole new Pandora's box. I believe from a social perspective, it should remain marriage between a man and a woman. And now you're trying to expand definitions or what have you. And I don't think there's any need to do that.
Okay. Do you think that the Obama administration is having a war on religion?
I see it certainly headed that way, and I see that they do not respect, certainly, I think there's absolutely a war on Christianity and Catholicism in the way they're trying to force their own beliefs or basically take away people's individual beliefs with such things as Obamacare and birth control. And I think it's really destroying the moral fiber of the country.
Right. Now,
our country has always been built on was founded on Judeo-Christian values, and I think the current administration is losing sight of that.
Okay, Annie, go ahead. I had a question, but I can wait.
All right. Now, when you mentioned that, there's now a court case going in. It just came up this past week. A woman was working for I think it was an Orthodox Jewish company, and which was a lingerie company of all things, and they fired her for dressing what they claim to be too provocative.
I'm not familiar with the case, so I'd need to, if you were looking for me to comment on, I need to understand the specifics. So you can fill me in the specifics. Who was dressing too provocatively?
This woman that was working for this lingerie company.
Well, I don't know the specifics. You're losing me on that one. If a lingerie company thought someone was dressing too provocatively.
Yeah, tell her to come to Michigan, Annie, and work for us in the nightclub. We're
once,
pretty much
once,
a bikini
once
bar.
Once again, I'm not touching that one either.
we don't want Ozzy to get sabotaged the minute he walks in his house. Okay, Ozzy, here's another Second Amendment. It's very clear. People like Richard Daley and Barack Obama and many others believe that within city limits, they can that government has the right of removal of firearms from individuals. How about Ozzy? How does he feel about that?
Second Amendment protects our right to bear arms. Recently, glad to hear that Governor Scott in Florida stood up for the Second Amendment because I believe there was a discussion about firearms and what have you during the Republican National Convention. And, I think all the laws, necessarily the laws, are in place, and we need to protect the Second Amendment.
Okay,
and it's not limited. It's not limited to particular areas, and we can't just overrule the Constitution when and where we choose.
Well, what's your take now on this mess with Eric Holder and Fast and Furious?
I think the House under Daniel Issa's leadership is really pushing for. I believe he's probably in contempt of the House and not turning over the documents that they've required. And I think it's very, very clear. And this shouldn't be a partisan effort. Ultimately, we have checks and balances. I believe they're trying to infringe on the investigation, and they have not been as forthcoming as required by Congress. And I think both sides will see that. I think Daniel Issa and John Boehner and others have requested the information, and time's wasting. It should have been provided months ago.
Okay. Should Holder then be impeached? Well, he can't be impeached, but can
it basically, he's obstructing justice. If he's not cooperating with Congress, he should be removed from office. And I think that needs is being the Daniel Issa, Boehner, and others are trying to make that crystal clear to him, and he's continuing to fight it. And if they're trying to fight it, I'd like to know what they're trying to hide.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we all have a good idea what they're trying to hide. All right, so tell me, as a congressman, let me rephrase this. As a taxpayer, not as a congressman. As a taxpayer.
Okay.
As a taxpayer.
Yep.
I'm going to walk in on primary. Why vote for Ozzy over Joe?
Well, I'll speak to why Ozzy. You should vote for Ozzy versus anyone in any anyone in this cycle. The number one issue facing our country right now is the economy. You know, Gallup, in all their wisdom, decided to conduct a poll on determining what's the number one issue. Over 90% of the Americans view the number one issue is the economy. My private sector experience, there's no one with my experience in this area, in this race. I have experience with small companies, with large companies, broad experience. I've generated over $800 million to the economy. I've created over 2,000 private sector jobs documented by and supported by people that I've worked with at these different companies. I've managed budgets in excess of $1.5 billion. It really comes down to the economy and my conservative principles. And, you know, the problem with Barack Obama, besides his ideology, he had no experience. He had no practical experience. So even if you agree with his ideology, I don't know why someone would vote for him. I disagree with his ideology. I disagree with his ideology. But I also disagree with that he had the necessary experience to become president of the United States. He was a community organizer, worked some in the state Senate. He was within 1 year of being in the U.S. Senate, he was running for president. He had no practical experience. And in this race, we need people. We can't just send people who are saying what they'll do and saying the right things. You know, the taxpayers are the hiring manager. If you're going to hire someone for a job, you have to look at the resume, not just what they're saying in the interview. What experience do they have? And there's no one in this race that has my experience, certainly when it comes to the economy. I respect the other candidates on the Republican side, but none of them have the same level of experience. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, all her entire career has been spent in government, like as I said earlier. And so she cannot relate to the economic issues of the day.
She has been trying to stir up the pot with saying that by not cutting taxes – no, I'm sorry, I'm getting this all backwards. By cutting taxes, we're hurting the little guy. How does she even come up with something like that?
Well, I mean, basically, they're absolutely and I this is one that I encourage my Democrat friends that are far on the left and in the middle to understand. They're absolutely trying to divide and conquer. They're trying to create a class warfare and pin those wealthy against those not so wealthy. I honestly believe people are smarter than that. I believe they're going to see through it. They're going to look at the record, and they're trying to make it that the rich aren't paying fair tax. You know, let's talk about the Buffett rule that Obama and Debbie Wasserman Schultz will tout that says anyone that makes over $1 million should pay a 30% minimum. The bulk of people who are making over $1 million are making that on capital gains tax, which is currently taxed at 15%. If you're making $1 million, over $1 million all on straight salary, you're paying a higher tax rate. On your investments, one, you've already paid a tax before you've invested that money. And two, if you make capital gains tax 30% for wealthy, it's going to have a catastrophic effect on the stock market. People are going to pull their money out of the stock market, and that's not just going to impact the rich. That's going to impact the middle class and the lower class, the more poverty, because people have money in 401ks that are invested in the stock market. So it's not a good thing, and it makes absolutely no sense. But it's a divide-and-conquer strategy. Don't look at the record. Let's divide and conquer. And that's what's happening, whether it's a war on women, whether it's class warfare, or any other, you know, or attacking Bain Capital, that even Democrat leaders are now saying, hey, Obama, enough's enough with the attacking of Bain Capital. They have created jobs. It has been an engine for our economy. But they're trying to attack Bain Capital and Mitt Romney. Every investment does not turn out like you would hope. There are some winners and some losers, but let the free market determine that, not the federal government determining that with Obama and crony capitalism by giving money, whether it's Salinger or any other of the failed investments, trying to funnel back money to your own donors to your campaign.
All right. Now, Janet Sandowski made a statement once that she didn't feel that you had the right to retain your own income. And Debbie Wasby Schultz on several occasions has made statements that sound like she was completely agreeing with her. How much of our income do you think we should be able to retain? What would be, in a perfect world, what should be the tax rate be? And
well,
this is something I haven't heard anyone answer right yet.
In a perfect world, you wouldn't have any tax. It would be a 0% tax, and whatever you earn, you keep.
You're the only one who said that. Thank you.
Well, I'm not saying that because that's the answer maybe you're looking for or what have you. But ultimately, you know, you want government to simply provide the services, one, that the Constitution called for, but two, anything that the private sector could do, I want the private sector to do. You know, defense, I want that to be a federal government issue. So then you're going to pay some tax to run an efficient military. But I say they're an efficient military. You know, we can't have government for the sake of when we talk about creating jobs, government doesn't create jobs. And even if I've said that, I've spoken error. Government needs to provide an environment that private sector can create jobs. Limited regulation. It's basically provide an environment, a fair level environment, so private sector can thrive and not be pumping up government jobs that generally tend to be ineffective and inefficient.
All right.
Start at zero and then work your way up, as opposed to if you come up with a number as far as what the tax rate should be, I'd want to build it zero sum. You know, and we should have zero-based budgeting in the federal government. Today, the way the federal government builds their budget is they look at what they spend today and then they build off of it. You know, some departments should go away. What is the need for what your budget should be, as opposed to telling me this is what I had, now add 5% on it? We actually need to freeze and start reducing spending in the federal government.
Okay.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. I haven't had anyone really answer it the way
I don't believe on this. I don't believe on it's all of everything that I've said is pretty much common sense, and I just have the business experience to back it up. This isn't rocket science. We need to make it simpler. In government officials and political leaders need to stop trying to confuse the public like they're not smart enough to get it. They're smart enough to get it. You're trying to complicate the issue so they don't get it and so they don't see through your BS. Make it simple. Keep it simple.
Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Absolutely.
Ozzie, who are some of the political figures that you kind of are influencing you, or maybe someone in the past that you look to as role models, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I mean, one of the guys that I absolutely have a great deal of respect for, and he recently endorsed me, is former Congressman J.C. Watts out of Oklahoma. Let me tell you a little. I've met him through my pastor in Fort Lauderdale. He's been a great advisor. One of the things that he said, he actually was a four-term congressman from Oklahoma. Every single time he was elected by greater margins, and he believed in term limits, and I believe in term limits. He said to me, when we were talking about term limits, everyone goes to Washington, D.C. thinking it's a cesspool, but once they get there, they want to treat it like their own private jacuzzi. He ran for four terms. He was successful four terms. He was only going to run three. And then George Bush, Rosa Parks, convinced him to run another term, and he won. He was the head of the Republican Congressional Caucus. He absolutely stepped down after four terms because he said he wanted to spend more time with his family. And he says this was the purpose. He was a social conservative, fiscal conservative, and he absolutely believed that we needed to get back to a limited government. I think he did a great job. But I think one of the big problems that we have nowadays is we have leaders and we have political leaders on both sides of the aisle that are part of the problem. They're there far too long. I absolutely believe a large part of our political mess would be eliminated with term limits, because then you're not going to be tied in with the lobbyist. You're going to go there, do the job, and then go back and live with your constituents as opposed to trying to make it a career-long, lifelong, and protecting your job. You're going to do what's right for the people, not necessarily what's right for you politically. And I absolutely believe in term limits, and I will term limit myself.
All right. Now, this is something that I've mentioned to a couple of people running for office, and I suggested it, and they said, I had never thought of it this way. But right now, Congress is being voting for their own paychecks. They're being paid through the federal government. How about removing those paychecks from the federal government and have you being paid directly by your constituents in the state and let the state legislatures determine what your remuneration should be?
Well, I think what they should do is, first of all, tie it to the budget as well. I don't think senators should be paid until we can pass a budget. I think while we have a federal deficit, they should take pay cuts because we need to have our government officials with some skin in the game and make sure that their pay is tied to results. You always talk about pay for performance in business. You need to have pay for performance in federal government. And absolutely, there's no way I would vote for. And I can't. And there's no way they should be voting for their own raises, especially with the economic conditions that the country is faced with right now.
Okay. Now, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been criticizing the voter laws because here in South Carolina, we have passed the voter ID, which Eric Holder is challenging in federal court. Georgia has it. Arizona. I believe a couple other states have now put it in. What's your take on voter ID?
Okay, I'm going to take a couple more questions. I am going to have to run, but the voter ID, I can't even believe that there's discussion on this. Absolutely, voters should be required to show photo ID. I've gone into Costco with my wife, and I've been stopped because I didn't have a card with photo ID. That basically I had to be with her because she had the Costco card. How can you have to go and show photo ID to go in Costco? And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz has the nerve to say that Republicans, by requiring photo ID, want to go back to Jim Crow laws. And that's one of her statements. And then when a reporter questioned her on it, I think it was actually a college reporter, she said, I never said that. And I've seen it, if you actually YouTube it, you'll see her showing it back to back, her saying it and then her saying, I never said that. It's outrageous. We want the power to be with the people. How can you ensure fair, equitable elections without requiring photo ID? And now in Florida, in Broward County, they're talking about people who are dead voting. So I guess it's Chicago revisited.
Now, you're
Ozzy, I wanted to also say thank you. I know you've stayed much, much longer, but I also have a message from my mother who's listening. My mother, who is listening, she used to be a nun. So hands down, the mother of six kids says, tell your friend I hope he wins.
Well, okay, thank
so
you very
my
much.
My mother's supporting you.
Thank you both for having me on. Thank you both for the time to spread the message. Please keep in touch. And all your listeners, please visit ozzyforcongress.com so you can see what I stand for. It's going to, besides beating Barack Obama in November, think, what would send a louder message throughout the entire country than defeating Debbie Wasserman Schultz? I ask for all of your support. I ask for those living in the district, I hope to earn your vote, and we absolutely can take our country back. So God bless you guys for having me, and God bless all your listeners.
Thank you
Ozzy.
And you're welcome to join anytime.
All right, thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, well, there we go. Another, you know, these people claim they'll give us a half hour, and they give us way, way more time. Another very good conservative as far as in comparison Boy, I mean, this is a nice thing for the Republicans down there. They have a choice. We've obviously heard three candidates, one who was essentially annexed to a different district. But you know what? How many districts don't? I mean, they're facing, in a lot of ways, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's a machine. The Democrats have her in force. And to see people like Ozzy and our Joes running, I'm not even going to comment on that other witch. But anyway, the bottom line is that this is – that's a great choice to have in the 20th district as we conclude with Ozzy as our last candidate. He's 23rd. Okay. Then Joe K got transferred to
23.
Okay, Wait a minute.
You've got actually four people running in District 23, but Ozzy's in the lead. He's got the strongest.
Okay.
Joe Kaufman, you've got that other witch, Karen Harrington.
Don't mention her name. They're the one who hung up on me. They're like, they wanted us to submit the questions in advance. We're like, we don't know what the questions are.
Yes.
Like, what?
Right now, it looks like Joe Goldner is going into his primary unopposed in District 20. He remained in District 20. The others went over to 23.
Okay. Now we got it.
Okay.
All right.
So, that was an exciting interview.
That was, and I'm very happy. I was actually expecting him to support the Patriot Act, and I'm not opposed, as we all know, I'm the anti-Patriot Act. I'm not opposed to rescinding it in full and rebuilding to protect our country. What I don't like is the fact that, okay, this law applies to everyone, including U.S. citizens, and we need to erase this part or put a line through it in the Constitution because it's for your protection. No, it doesn't work that way. We tell them what to do.
Exactly. Now, Thomas has been popping in and out on the phone line. So, Thomas, did you want to add a comment?
Well, I hate Facebook. That's why I'm a digress and I'm a make fun of Facebook for a minute. You know how they tend to be leaning left and all this, that, and the other? Well, you hear what's happening with their stock?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Facebook. What a scam. But also notice Facebook, Zuckerman, has been a frequent guest at the White House. Now,
uh-huh.
Has anyone been catching in the news lately? Since Obama took office, there have been 1.2 million visits by lobbyists and other special interests to Obama's 1.2 million visitors that are either lobbyists or special interest groups to his direct staff or into his office. Now, who
that
has enough time for 1.2 million people to
be transferred to jail for that.
Our house?
That's horrible. He should go to jail for that. That's complete corruption. God.
And Zuckerman was one of the people that had been a frequent visitor and quote-unquote close personal friend of Obozo. Now, you wonder why his stock was touted so well on Main Street media? And that's why they predicted it to go from 38 up to 44, even 48, but it didn't. It halved itself. Now people are losing money.
Yep. Actually, in an article that I just posted, and I'll post the other one too, they're saying that it's eventually going to trade at $9.95. That's what those.
Oh, get. Man.
That's what they get.
What a scam.
Anything Obama's got his hands in, eventually, Thomas, I think it's just going to be the 95 cents, my personal opinion.
That's what they get. And you know what that says to me? Honestly, it says to me that contrary to what Mr. Obama thinks he thinks he is, that he's not in control. God is still running things around here. And so, sorry to wax philosophical for those folks who may not be religious, but you know what? At the end of the day.
Man. Oh, man.
So, I mean, I had to make fun of them, and I posted it on Facebook too. I'll read my post that I put. I said,
No, don't read it. Don't read it. Let everyone else go in and read it. Really got about 10 minutes left.
It's just it's two sentences.
Okay.
I commented on the links. That's all I did, and I put, folks, for those of you who didn't get. Oh, that's not it. Is I put. Well, Facebook, talking to the corporate folks here, you have allowed yourself to be used as tools against people opposed to current policies. You have deleted posts, banned people from adding friends without explanation, and many other underhanded tactics. Well, and I put that in all caps, as the saying goes, you are now reaping what you have sown. And then I posted the links to their stocks crash.
Hey, listen, did anyone catch, I just lost cool mic, did anyone catch in the news yesterday these Occupy protests and anarchists that were battling the Chicago police? And they actually had sticks and stuff that they were hitting the cops over the head with. You know, and of course, then they get upset because the cops respond with their batons. But as I'm looking at this melee, there is this one guy. He was an adult. He was wearing a Pokemon backpack. He had a yellow Pokemon backpack. Now, can anyone tell me why I should take these people seriously? If this guy who's in the Occupy movement and he's supposed to be taken seriously with his protest, he's battling the cops, but he's got a Pokemon backpack.
Well,
did you catch that, cool Mike?
Yeah, I caught it. I'm just laughing. I muted myself because I can't stop laughing.
I'm watching him as he's throwing punches, and he's got a stick in his hand, and he's battling the cops, but he's wearing a yellow Pokemon backpack.
This is too funny to even comment. Hey, Annie, you got to take it from here. I got to walk into the Capitol. So, okay.
All right. We want to remind everyone that we're going to be back again on Friday. You know, same bat time, same bat station, and we'll have more fun and info going on. There's a lot of stuff we could have gotten into, like Joe Biden attacking Mitt Romney on Bain Capital, and then the mayor of Newark going after Obama, telling him it was nauseating what he was doing, and that their unions and state employees had investments involved in Bain, and what he's doing is hurting their investments, their retirement. I mean, there's so much more we could go on and on and on about. Man, and also there was that North Carolina school, that teacher that was suspended because a student was questioning her facts about Obama. She made a statement about Romney back in 1965 bullying a kid. And they said, well, didn't Obama write in Dreams of My Father how he bullied a girl when he was a teenager? And it's in his book. And she goes, she turned around and said, you can be arrested for criticizing the president of the United States. How dare he? And I says, well, didn't you say worse things about George Bush? But thankfully, that teacher has been suspended. She's suspended with pay for now. But let's see how long she holds on to her job. How'd you like that one, Thomas? I think I lost Thomas.
Hello. Trouble.
Yeah, I'm here.
I was on mute because I had to go check the mail looking for some money.
Oh, sorry about that. No, all right. We're coming down to our last few minutes, so we'll probably just close the show off like about 5 minutes early. But before we close the show off, I want to play one more time because I love this song. My Name is America by Todd Allen Herredine. And please go onto his website, toddallen.com. And either get his album or go onto YouTube and watch the video. You know, give him some hits on the video here. So here is My Name is America. I love this song. Okay, it's supposed to start.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. My name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be just gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without
in trouble. Count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.